Chapter 3. He was a child standing at the top of a grand staircase made of marble. Squatting down, he felt its coldness with his hand. There was light streaming through a stained glass window much bigger than he was, and the light was broken by ornate balusters that split the rays into shards of colored light and shadows on the floor. The walls were made of squares that had the most beautiful patterns and colors he had ever seen. He ran and pressed his lips to them and laughed. More coldness. His laughter came echoing back to him, and he grew silent. If he were to descend the staircase or one of the others, it would take him into the largest space he had ever seen. Everyone he knew or had ever known or could know would fit in this place with everyone they knew. It was disorienting. He wanted to look at something small, smaller than himself. He looked back to the shadow of the balusters and noticed there was a tiny thin line that did not belong. What was that? He followed it back to its source and found an impossibly narrow thread stretched between the floor and handrail. He touched it gently. It was sticky. Suddenly, there was something moving there, something with many tiny reeling arms. He was fascinated, but horrified. This was not the calming thing he needed right now. He unfocused his eyes and he saw the dust floating in the sunlight. He narrowed in on one speck of dust. That was better. It swirled and moved, dancing with its brothers and sisters, gently, peacefully. He waved his hand near it, and all the motes were sent into chaos. Suddenly, someone was whispering his name. He turned to see a woman beckoning him. The rich colors of his dreams faded to muted shades of gray as Adam Jones awakened to early dawn. He felt unrested. The dreams came to him more often now than when he was a child. The dreams of wandering through huge, elaborate buildings no human being on earth had seen for close to two generations now. When the dreams did not come, he missed them. But when they did come, he awoke fatigued as if he had actually been tramping through these buildings all night. He turned to see Emma sleeping beside him. He smoothed a veil of dark hair back behind her ear and studied the face that he had loved for so long. The straight nose, the spacing of the closed crescent eyes, the top lip that was fatter on one side than the other, they all fit the template of longing that was branded on him. The template aged and changed with her. It gave him peace, as always. He touched her arm, and with a gentle moan, she turned her back to him so he could cup her body in his arm around her and entwined in hers, a well-rehearsed routine. Her skin, always cooler than his, belonged against him. His hand, on her chest, felt her beating heart. It was as close to not being alone as a man could be. There was still time to sleep before morning fully broke, and as his eyes closed, he saw the edge of her smile. When he woke later, she was gone. He pulled on some clothes and found her in her studio at the back of the house, waging war with a mortar and pestle. Her shoulder was high and her elbow pivoted like a machine. She was grinding roughly, and he knew instantly something was bothering her. "Emma, what is it?" he asked, embracing her from behind and bending to breathe the scent of her neck. She visibly relaxed at his touch, but continued to work the pestle. "I have to go back to Sovereigns in a couple of weeks. There was a message this morning. I always know it's coming, and it always takes me by surprise." The rasp of her grinding stopped as she turned and looked at him. "Why is that?" "Has it been a year already?" He took a stray curl from her face and tucked it into the knot of tangled curls she had quickly arranged and secured with a paintbrush. "It always takes you by surprise because you hate it, and when it's not looming over you, you like to pretend it doesn't exist." She set the mortar down and stepped into his embrace. Her arms slipped around his waist. He whispered in her ear, "Maybe it won't be as bad this time." "Ha! I've painted his portrait every year for 18 years. It never gets any better. It only gets worse. And this one, oh, he says it's the 35th anniversary of his reign, and he wants something special, like he's the fucking king or something, the king of Abacus. Adam was silent, and he rubbed her back. She thought he caught his breath, perhaps to keep from letting a small laugh escape as she muttered into his chest. She recognized her own self-indulgence and continued in a brighter tone. I'll be fine, Jonesy. It's something we have to endure, and there's just no getting around it. I don't want it to throw me into a funk again this year. She pulled back and smiled at him with genuine excitement. Besides, we'll have to go collecting to make his special paints. It'll be fun. And you bring your camera. She rested her cheek back on his chest. Well, we can go later today if you like. He spoke absently, and she knew he was thinking of something else. He loved this place, and she knew it. The smell of linseed oil and wood, the jars of brushes, the handles softly patinated by her confident grip, the spatters of paint in Emma's rich colors found on nearly every surface, the myriad bottles on the windowsills holding the mysterious constituents of Emma's art, throwing amber, blue, and red light across the floor. The light streamed in here, as real as it could be. The leaves of the trees outside the window undulated in shadow on the wall, the hewn cupboards, the floor. It made the room feel alive. This room was alive with Emma, even when she wasn't there. She noticed his stillness as he considered the room and stood back from him and watched as he framed an image with his fingers. He was gone from her, and she smiled to see his immersion. He left the room for a moment and came back with his Polaroid. She was surprised. The Polaroids were so precious, so finite. She knew he had seen something that fit the inscrutable template in his head. She slipped from the room and left him to his mission. Here in the northeast corner of the northeast quadrant of Abacus, well past the village at its center and the country homes and farms that skirted it to the north, and even farther than the woods behind Adam and Emma's stone and cedar house, well beyond the boundaries where the average person would wander, was a field of flax. And now, at the height of summer, the growth brushed at Adam's hips as he watched his wife a few yards ahead trail her fingers over the delicate blue flowers as she forged her path through the tangled foliage. It was a beautiful day, with a comforting, placid sky and a pleasing volume of light, benign-looking clouds. Bees! Emma called out excitedly, bending at the waist and pointing. Adam jogged up to her. Sure enough, he said, leaning forward to see the two honeybees, their back legs clad in pantaloons of pollen. A big grin spread across Adam's gently weathered face. "Are you laughing at me?" she asked him in mock horror. It was one of the countless things he loved about her. How many times had she seen a honeybee? Yet every single time, the genuine surprise, the uncontainable joy. He grabbed her around the waist and drew her close. "Yes, I am laughing at you," he whispered into her ear. He smothered her giggles with his lips. "Listen, you can hear them." And she broke away from him and ran a few paces ahead. They stood perfectly still in the gentle light of late morning. He could hear them, along with his own breathing, because their tiny vibrations stood out against the otherwise silent world. This was not a well-traveled area, and it had been left with no ambient noise. "We should come back soon for honey." She started off again for the large tree that stood ahead atop a small rise. Adam considered the row of thriving bee boxes thrumming with life at the edge of the field. They had been put there years before for the sole benefit of this field of flax, which was harvested each year to make linseed oil for Emma's paints. The flax and the bee boxes to aid in its pollination were here because his wife was a talent of such sublime richness that it was poignantly undeniable, and everyone in Abacus knew it. They were headed for the black walnut tree that stood near the Abacus perimeter. The planned border of the city had been expanded to include the tree over 100 years before, on a suggestion by an artist who was wise enough to realize that eventually Abacus would run out of his favorite shade of brown paint. Each year, Adam and Emma made the hike and collected the nuts in their tough green warty hides and soaked them for weeks to extract their rich woody brown. It was time. Dozens of them waited, gathering in the still, silent air. Emma swung her basket, and they talked the easy talk of people who had known each other for decades and liked it. Their strange beginning, two young children meeting, one exploring, one abandoned, in an otherwise empty forest, had seemed like fate to both of them. They had loved each other without pretense, and each using the gauge of the other's perception of them as a guide, grew into their partnership. She used to worry they would run out of things to talk about, but it hadn't happened yet, and she'd stopped worrying about it after 8 years or so. They reached for each other without looking. Their articulate fingers fit together like puzzle pieces, playing their small part in the beautiful whole that was their life together. The nuts were plentiful and aromatic. Adam loved the slightly citrusy, woody scent and how they made his hands smell, even though the brown stains they left could last for many days. As was their tradition, they ate lunch together under the canopy of the tree and lingered a while, lying on their backs and staring up into the motionless foliage. Emma twisted an old twig in her hand. Adam knew she was thinking, and he believed he knew what she was thinking, but he waited in silence. "I don't think we're going to be chosen." It was a thought that had been nagging at him, too, but he'd waited for her to come forth with it. "It's a distinct possibility, Emma. I'll be 35 next year, and I'll be removed from the pool. It doesn't make sense. We've always been perfect candidates." She tossed the stick aside. "We're both good at what we do. Why would he not want to pass on our genes?" She turned her head towards him. "We would make a fine child together." "I understand your frustration. I don't know the answer. It's something we may just have to accept. Not everyone is chosen." She looked back up into the branches. "I'm thinking about asking Sovereign when I'm painting him next month." Adam sat up and stared at her. "You're joking." "Well, why not? I've spent more time with him than anyone. I was barely 17 when he came nosing around the art studios looking for a portrait artist. What's the worst that can happen?" He stared into her eyes until she looked away. "You're right. Forget I said anything. We'll deal with whatever happens." She sighed and he stroked her hair, realizing it was precisely the same color as the deep walnut brown paint they were going to make. Adam pondered his wife. She was so wise, filled with compassion, but fierce, too. Nobody messed with her. She would have made a wonderful mother. She turned her head and studied his face. "Our lives are rich, Adam. We don't need a child to be happy. It just would be another path to explore with joy. I have no idea how he evaluates people and in what ways we fall short. I would like to understand." "Emma, you don't fall short in any ways. You've contributed immense richness to the community. You've improved virtually everyone's quality of life. That's worth a lot." She stared into the sky. "We both have." Emma rose to her feet, brushed off her pants, and smiled at him. "We better get going. The silence starts filling me up if we stay too long." He knew what she meant. He smiled at her and shook out the blanket and began collecting their things. Every noise they made seemed amplified in the silence. Emma looked around, breathing deep the good, clean, still air. "Ah, a walnut that tried to evade us." She jogged a few feet to collect the errant nut. Adam felt a surge of something like electricity and was already running towards her when he heard her gasp. She was standing frozen, one hand touching her face and the other pointing with a shaking finger. "Adam," she whispered. He ran to her. It was a toad as big as Adam's fist, with an earthworm writhing in its mouth. They knew it was a toad, and they knew it was an earthworm from the books and pictures they'd studied as children, books of animals that once populated the earth. Adam was astounded, confounded. "This isn't possible," he whispered. There were only two species in Abacus, human beings and honeybees, and it had been that way for nearly 100 years. The human beings and honeybees were not only the sole inhabitants of Abacus, they were the only animals alive on the planet. The toad sat there in its knobby brown and gray skin, swallowing down the worm, gazing through big slitted golden eyes, oblivious to whatever revelations its presence suggested. It was fat and unconcerned, and clearly it was successful in living. "We have to catch it. No one will believe this," Emma cried out, reaching for the toad. It blinked skeptically at her and took a few hops away. Emma scrambled after it, and each time she got within reach, the toad hopped further away. "It's going to go down that hole," she cried, and lunged towards it. "Emma, careful," Adam cried, but it was too late. She felt a warm, soothing rush of heat across her right temple as her head brushed against the membrane that separated Abacus from the ravaged earth. The unnatural silence dissolved as a calm but authoritative female voice rang out, "Emma Dunham Jones." Moments later, they heard the stern voice of Sovereign. "You have breached the perimeter. Return home immediately, Citizen Emma Jones."